It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast.
How would that be the White Sox?
Featuring
Wilmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher, Boy Shasky.
Take it out.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Yes, first pitch swing, drives one. Deep right field. Gone, he's done it again. And this time, he did it on the very first pitch of the game.
Oh, baby, how about Mike Yastrzemski? Well, I was ready to run this guy out of town in April. This guy's making September watchable for the Giants. But Mikey, yes. Good morning to everybody out there. Hopefully, you're getting off your graveyard shift. You're in a great mood. Hopefully, Dreamforce traffic's not getting to you. Although, the Dreamforce conference probably helping out the overnight dancers today. Shout out to all the garbage men, ecology workers, janitors, doctors, nurses, babies, teachers, cops. All the moms getting their kids ready for school. How about that? How about that? Make sure you brush your teeth, kids. Make sure you brush your teeth. Dave Fleming will join us in moments here. Shout out to our friends at Flowing Water Plumbing and Drain. If you're going to call it to the roast, you better bring it. Because if you don't, you will be flushed. Brought to you by Flowing Water Plumbing and Drain. Dave needs a couple minutes out there in Baltimore. I think he's finished up a crab cake there. Mikey, yes, Giants. One of the first two games against the Orioles.
There was a huge article this morning from Andrew Baggerly in The Athletic regarding John Miller and him being a broadcaster for 50 years, essentially, and going back to his time with the Oakland A's, which is where he started, and then he was the Baltimore Oriole broadcaster for 14 years, and Dave was prominently featured in the column by Andrew Baggerly that I read this morning in 5 o'clock hour, and, you know, it's... I think we take for granted how great the telecast is for the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, Dave being one of the younger ones, it feels like he's been there forever, you know, and he's working with a guy who's a first ballot Hall of Famer and was the voice of ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. Yeah. And it's just, we're very lucky to have these people in our lives as sports fans.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody underestimates what we have out here as broadcasters. I think we kind of know that we have one of the best broadcast teams, if not one of the best broadcast teams in baseball. And it's been like that for a long, long time. John Miller, I mean, we had him on before the Rick Wood game. That feels like an eternity ago. Wow, that was so long ago. We had him on for like 30 minutes. We asked him three questions, but his stories are just legendary. Legendary. I once ran a show with Uncle Marty, and Uncle Marty and John Miller were on the air together. They did like 90 straight minutes commercial free. And I'm like, hey, we got a break. And after a while, as a board, I'm going to say, you know what, just let these guys go. Just let them go. We'll make up the CBS breaks later on at night or whatnot. We'll break. The clock was messed up. Clock, 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 clock. You want to talk about messing up clocks. But it was great story time because John Miller's that guy. His memory, his recall, just fascinating. It's unreal. So you get Flem, you get Miller. They make a great team on the radio side. You get Kruk and Kipe, who obviously... their days are winding down here as broadcasters. We get it. The health issues with Mike Kruko, which is really, really sad, but he's still giving it everything that he got. No, John Miller's been great. Now, is my boy Joe Angel still at Baltimore? Is he retired? Remember Joe Angel?
Yeah, he was a Giant guy for a minute.
For a couple years.
Much for him.
Yeah, no, unfortunately. What was his tagline at the end of the game? What was his tagline? Love it. What was Joe Angel's tagline? He had a tagline after every game.
I stink.
No, oh, come on, don't do that. Joe Angel was solid. He was fine. He was fine.
His thing, they are in the win column.
Yeah.
And the Giants are in the win column.
There you go. Yeah, and they went wire to wire that year. What was it, 04, 03? I get the years mixed up nowadays.
03. But
they 03, they get wired when they lost to the Marlins. And he always said, well, the Giants are in first place. And he said something in the first game of the season. And they were in first place the whole season. So Joe Angel, put some respect on him. What is he doing? Is he still in Baltimore? What's his deal?
Don't know.
I kind of miss Joe Angel. He was good for a couple of years.
He is retired right now.
Is he? Yeah, he's done.
Did you guys see what the Brewers did last night, just as we checked the wild world of sports in Major League Baseball? Did you catch that?
I did not check out the Brew Crew.
Well, the Brewers are what everyone thinks Tampa Bay is. They won the division again this year, and last night they clinched it, the NL Central. They're like an 88-win team already. And, you know, Jackson Chourio is their 20-year-old superstar who helped win them a game the other day. They put out a baby carriage with non-alcoholic alcohol beverages for him him to drink from as everyone was spraying champagne.
That's cool.
And then Bob Uecker, who is the longtime Brewers play-by-play guy, came down and said, I peed my pants. It was a moment in internet history.
Yeah, Uecker's so good, man. He's so good. I got to check that out. I didn't see it.
It's really good.
I was just too busy watching my White Sox lose another game. But I would rather be the White Sox. That's freaking Dave Fleming on the River Islands Guest Line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands Guest Line. Is it a time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, and Lathrop? Flip, good morning to you. Giants, man, playing some good ball out there in Baltimore, but that's a John Miller's old stomping ground. So has he shown you around town, the Charm City? Has he got you a good crab cake, some good lobster crab out there in Baltimore? McCormick's. Flip, good morning.
He has done absolutely none of that. After all those nice things I said about him to Baggerly, that zero, no hospitality, no tour guide. No, in fairness to John, I have been myself pretty occupied here. So I meant it when I said it to Baggerly. It is amazing to come here. I mean, because John's been in San Francisco twice as long as he was here in Baltimore. But they have never gotten over the fact that the Orioles let him go. I mean, letting him go is sort of like a euphemism. Like, basically, they fired him. Like, you know, you listen to John, it's hard to imagine listening to John and saying, nope, that's not good enough for us. We can do better. And that's what the Orioles did. And so it never ceases to amaze me to come here and hear the reaction of people who are still furious and have never gotten over that.
Wow.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I didn't know that he was just fired like that. That's insane. Well, you know, I'm looking at the Giants, and it feels too little, too late. I mean, this is a great Baltimore team. I know they're slumping right now, but to see them do what they've done, it brings me to Blake Snell. Any other year, it feels like we would be just talking about this guy till we're blue in the face. This is as good as any Jason Schmidt run, any Lincecum run, the Logan Webb run a few years ago, Rodon season a couple years ago. What he's doing is spectacular, but it's like, is he going to come back? Do they even have a chance to bring him back? I know they signed Matt Chapman, who was a Boris guy. This feels a little different. Boy, you know, I know the risk with trying to sign starting pitching at guys his age, but I'd love for them to find a way to bring this guy back on a 5-year deal. I don't know what it's going to take, but how likely is it that they can get him to come back to the Giants?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely different than Chapman because there, you know, this is not to say Blake. I think Blake is very happy here. And as weird as the start was, I think Snell has found a real comfort zone with the Giants. Like, he loves the West Coast. He loves California. Great place to pitch. But it's not Chapman. Like, Chapman really, truly, like, deeply wanted to be in Northern California. Like, they didn't want anything else. And so it was easy to get it done. It took a lot of cash, but it was easy to get it done because there was just such strong feelings on both sides of it. So, you know, like, okay, that's true. It's not going to be like Chapman. But they absolutely have a chance to bring him back. Like, it's going to come down to money, like it always does with just about every free agent. And I tell you what, you watch him pitch the other night, and I know, look, there are things you can nitpick with Blake. And he pushes back on a lot of the inning stuff. But look, the track record of his career is he's, you know, there are going to be lots of times during the year where he's not going to give you the innings that maybe you want from a starter. But the innings that he does give you are the best. And I talked to Brandon Hyde for a long time yesterday, a manager of the Orioles, and he said to me, he looked me right in the eye and he said, that was the best guy we've seen all year. That was the best stuff we have seen all season. Number one, Blake Snell against the Orioles. And to me, if you have championship aspirations, what's your avenue to winning a World Series? It's to have a guy like that on the mound in the playoffs. And so the regular season is one thing, and he helped you win games. The Giants have been a way above 500 team in the games that he's pitched this year, so he's made them better in the regular season. But you sign Blake Snell to have him in the playoffs, and when you get him in the playoffs and the other team is looking at that stuff, it's not a fun feeling.
And that's 4 years in a row, Flynn, where he's just dealt in the second half of the season. The track record's unbelievable when it comes to July, August, and September, and he replicates it once again. I was watching him the other day thinking, play a contender right now like the Yankees. Even the Baltimore Orioles are probably kicking themselves saying, we should have sold DeFore for this guy to try to make a push for a World Series.
I said it on the – I don't want to cut you off, but I said it on the telecast the other night. It's like – because I asked the Giants, and look, I don't want to give away any secrets or anything, and I won't name specifics, but because we didn't want to trade. The Giants didn't want to trade Blake Snell, but the Giants were also in a position where if they got an offer of like a really talented young player, they were going to have to at least consider it. Like a position player you thought, hey, this guy can be a part of our core for the next many years. You had to consider it. And I was told not one decent, even close offer. Not one, not the parameters of one, not the beginning of a discussion of one, not one true good prospect was ever even brought up by any team around the trade deadline. And to me, if I'm an Orioles fan or a Yankees fan or a Dodgers fan or a Brewers fan or a Phillies fan, one of the teams that knew they were going to be in, and so you're positioning for the playoffs at that point, I'd be pissed. Wow. Like, how could we be so short-sighted in terms of, like, and it's probably the opposite of being short-sighted. Like, let's have some short-sightedness. Let's go for it this year. And if you had Blake Snell on your team, you'd be in a position to win it all. And I just can't believe that. That blows my mind that nobody was willing to at least tempt the Giants and make them think about it.
Wow, that's fascinating, Fum. That blows me away, too, because I'm watching them deal saying, boy, Baltimore needs a pitcher. Yankees need a pitcher. All these teams, like you just mentioned, Dave, they need a guy like Blake Snell. Hopefully Blake Snell's a Giant for a long, long time because I love the way he pitches. Now, Mike Yastrzemski. There's a lot of talk, and Jasek and I joke about Yaz all the time, but he got a lot of heat early in the season. I thought was unwarranted. The numbers are not eye-popping. We're not saying he's an all-star, but the guy just plays hard. Did you see what he's doing the last two nights with the leadoff bombs or whatnot? He's having a nice, solid season, and he's very interesting. I don't know why I'm so intrigued with Mike Yastrzemski, but like as a fourth outfielder and a contender, he could help a lot of teams. I don't know what his value is on the Giants, but Mike Yastrzemski, man, for a lot of heat he got early in the season, he's not having a bad year at all, Dave.
Yeah, he's having a good year. He's having a Mike Yastrzemski kind of year, and he deserves credit for being a pro. That's what he is. He takes his job seriously, and I think there's a great chance that he's back. I mean, how could you not, if it's a one-year commitment, how could you not look at him and say, yeah, we're a better team with him around? And you could quibble about what's the role. Like, it's good to have choices. It's good to have more talented players than you have space for. So I don't really see the argument at this point with the way he's finishing the year of not bringing him back. I think that's going to happen. And you know what? You never know. Like, you bring him back, and then in the offseason, if, like you say, all of a sudden you got more of a surplus than you thought. You signed somebody else. Jung-Hoo Lee looks great coming back from his injury. And maybe, maybe you can trade him at that point. He definitely has value because he's a good player. And a lot of teams could use him. If I'm the Orioles, I'm like, hey, you know what? He seems to swing the bat really well here in this park. Yeah. Let's call the Giants and see what it would take.
Dave, we're talking about like roster construction a lot here, and there's no way to like kind of tiptoe around it. I know you can't divulge everything and anything, but there's been a lot written about just the front office, Buster's involvement in the Chapman deal, some one side saying, he had to grab the steering wheel essentially, another side saying, Farhan was in the hospital, and I don't want to ask about what's going on with him medically or anything like that. This has been a bizarre couple of weeks here, like a bizarre couple of weeks. Are we going to get to hear from anybody in that front office at any point over the next couple of weeks? Do you think that they're going to have, just some sort of, a dais where everybody's out front and talking to the fans? Because they just feel very directionless right now. And there's just a lot of stuff being written. And I'm not seeing a lot of people standing at a podium taking accountability. So it's just, I feel like we're in a really weird spot right now.
I hope so. I think that would help, is to be a little more out there, a little more visible. Now, part of it is, Farhan was not, it came out that he had to go to the hospital. He's fine. I talked to him the other day in person. He looks fine. He's feeling a lot better. It was mostly like he got dehydrated, and so they needed to just have him rest and sort of recuperate for a couple of days. But he's fine. But yeah, it's never a bad thing to be a little more visible and vocal and articulate your side of the story as opposed to letting everybody else tell the story. I mean, I guess I would just say this. Two things can be true. Buster's on the executive committee of the Giants. Like, of course he's involved. That's the whole point. That's why it's great to have Buster back in the fold. Like, he's a big part of this franchise. So, of course he's involved. And then the flip side can also be true of there's still a guy who is in charge, and that's Farhan. And so, like, I don't know that there's as much of a conflict as everybody is making it out to be. Like, every negotiation is different and has different sort of pressure points. But to your big picture thing, I mean, I would say I would be strongly in favor of just a little more openness from Farhan and from everybody involved of just like, let's get nothing to hide. Let's come out and talk about this a little bit. Could be that it's the end of the year and everybody's just trying to get to the finish line and figure we'll address all that stuff once the year's over.
Yeah, because, you know, Dave, as a sports fan, you see, like, Jerry West comes to the Warriors, and there's a credibility that they desperately needed, you know? John Lynch, he's a credible person, even though he had never done the job before. Having Buster involved in whatever capacity, it just gives them credibility that I think they really need with the fan base right now, and it's encouraging to hear that he's a part of it. Doesn't mean he's going to be super successful. There's tons of examples of great athletes who weren't great front office or executives or whatever, but I just think he's a credible face that Giants fans want to see.
Buster's going to be successful. He is. He's going to be good at this stuff. And I think there is a dynamic of Buster's real conscience does not want to be the guy who's sort of hovering around and make it look like he's, you know, evaluating everybody. And so I think Buster's stayed mostly distant. He's watching every game. He's paying close attention. He knows everything that's going on. But I think there could come a time where all of us would love to see Buster around a little more in that sort of Jerry West style, like be available to talk about the team and not feel like he's undermining anybody or not at least have the outside perception be that way. I think that would be a healthy thing for everybody. I hope we get to that point at some point. But look, this is not Farhan is a friend of mine, and I've told him this to his face. This is not a criticism. But I think it would be great to hear from him a little more, to have him be around and talking about stuff a little more often. I think everybody would appreciate that. That would only be a good thing.
Flynn, you've been around for a while. We've watched Giants baseball for a long time, Shasky and I. And Shea, he used the word bizarre. To me, it's one of the more bizarre endings to a season when you consider all the articles coming out with Slusser and Bagley. You had Luciano and Fitz. You've got team meetings. You got the team getting shut out of three straight games. Is this one of the more bizarre endings to a season you've been a part of with the San Francisco Giants?
Well, we've had some. I mean, we have specialized in chaos at times over the years. Like, that's kind of, you know, like it hasn't been drama free over my 22 years for lots of different reasons. But yeah, and I think one goal for everybody, all of us, like everybody who cares about the Giants, is to calm a little bit of that down. Like, let's, you know, and part of why I say like maybe being a little more visible and open would help is, I do think that almost always helps calm things down. And it's not good to have, even if it's just a perception, even if it's not reality and it's just a perception, it's just not good to have people around the game thinking that that's what's going on there, that, man, they're falling apart or what's happening over there. Like, you don't want that. So we know that's not, the Giants are a top tier organization, franchise, in the way that they take care of people, the way that they take care of their players, the way that they value their history, the ballpark, the way that they always conduct themselves, like they have the fans in mind. Like, there's no doubt about that. So I do think it should be a goal for everybody to eliminate some of that stuff that you're talking about.
Dave, I know you watched the Niner game this weekend, and this guy, Sam Darnold looked incredible. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's just absolutely, you used to be Mr. Pac-12, so seeing him do what he did, I couldn't believe he beat the Niners.
Slim, he's got talent for once.
My head was ready to explode. Dude, the third down throws were killing us.
He's got talent for once, right, Flynn? He's not with the Jets. He's got people to throw to.
He does. He does. I mean, it's a great reminder. This should be a great lesson and reminder. Like, context matters so much in that sport. Like, so much. And there's a reason why Kyle wanted him here. You know, there was a reason why Kyle thought he was a great fit with the Niners. And look, if Kyle helped him get back on track, I think that's undoubtedly true. But the guy's talented. And, yeah, it was a little painful to watch. He's good. Like, my whole outlook on their team has changed. Like, I think they're a pretty darn good team. I don't think we're going to look back at that loss and think that that was, like, some horrible loss. I think Sam Darnold's pretty good.
And they got the Houston Texans at home this Sunday. Fascinating game. 2-0 teams there. Cal undefeated. You recall it, the San Diego State game. And they're going out of Tallahassee to play my lowly Florida State Seminoles, who are 0-3. Your thoughts on that? And where will you be calling college football this weekend, Flynn?
If Cal wins that game, and I think they should. Now, it's never easy. You go on the road. I know things are like, it's speaking of chaos, Florida State football right now. Ooh. It's not easy, but they should win that game. They're better than Florida State. And if they can find a way to win that game and come home, Cal will have the biggest college football game in a bunch of years in the Bay Area. Like, hosting Miami will be a very big game. And that's cool. Like, that's what was so fun for me as a Stanford guy when Luck showed up. And all of a sudden, you know, the whole world of college football is paying attention to us. Like, that's really fun. And we haven't had that all that much in our Bay Area history. And that's what we're going to get if Cal wins this weekend. So I sure hope they do. I'm pulling for them just because I think that October 10th or whatever day it is game would be awesome. I'll be in Provo, Utah. I've got Kansas State, BYU. Kansas State is two undefeated teams. And let me tell you this, this is probably too much. I'm probably going over the top here. But I believe that the Kansas State quarterback is going to be the next big thing in college football. This guy is so talented. He reminds me of Lamar Jackson. I saw Lamar when he first showed up at Louisville, and he was raw, and he had some polishing up to do and some learning. But, man, this kid for Kansas State, his name is Avery Johnson, and he drives a purple K-State colored Corvette around campus.
No way.
He's got the long hair coming out the back of the helmet. He's got YouTube dunk highlight videos of his high school basketball days, and the kid can absolutely fly. Like, some guys can run. This guy can run. And I can't wait to watch him play in person.
I'll be watching.
Oh, now you'll be watching K-State, huh, Chasky?
From the wedding.
Yeah, they were mocking me about K-State in Manhattan after they stole one in Tulane a couple weeks ago. K-State's always had a good solid program, Flem. We know about our Wildcats, man. They play tough in Manhattan. That's a big game. Yeah, come on, Flynn.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, no.
The guy's head so big, he's tapping like crazy.
Tell Chasky, man. You got to pay attention to K-State, man. They've had a respectable program. Have a good call today.
They're good. I mean,
go ahead,
Flynn. They have great running backs. They're a good team. They could be in the playoff at the end of the year.
Hey, let's go. Remember old Michael Bishop back in the Big 12 days? They lost to Texas during that game. Anyway, Flynn, have a good call, man.
No,
we'll talk to you next week. No, you don't remember.
All right.
See you, buddy.
Talk to you guys soon.
Hey, Texas first, the Big 12 championship game, K-State was undefeated. They're about to go. Uh-huh. And Texas, oh, man, it was a big-time upset. Michael Bishop was
sick.
You just
had to be there.
No, I wouldn't. I was watching. Michael Bishop was sick. He was sick at K-State. Do some research.
The only Bishop I recognize is Juice.
Oh, yeah. Not the one from X-Men? Come on now.
That one's okay.
What?
Yeah.
Bishop is a beast. Both Bishops, all Bishops. Bishop is a hell of a name, by the way. Underrated name. When I think of Bishop, I think tough. I was like, yeah, that guy's got some
Desmond
things
Bishop,
too.
Linebacker, Cal.
Yeah, hey, shout out to Desmond Bishop, by the way, City College San Francisco. Got to interview him 2 days before the Super Bowl when he wore a ring with the Green Bay Packers when they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers out in Arlington.
Clean it up, Monte.
That's another Bishop. There we go. We got a break. Mike Lively, back-to-back guests. Let's go. Matt Lively, talking Niners, baby. Talking Niners. Let's go. I like when we get back-to-back guests. Makes our job easy. So it's coming up in the game. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.
Hey, it's Brian from San Ramon. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Bonte and Shasky on 95.7 The Game. Shanahan, run the ball.
Well, they have run the ball. Maybe not as much as I would like in the second half because they're getting a little shut down and because of the score and everything. But Jordan Mason, Bonte, how many touches is he on pace for this year?
400 a day.
I mean, it's only two games.
Gotta get a backup running back in here.
Oops.
Let me look at our practice squad. Our practice squad, Keyshawn Vaughn. It's a name to watch out for. Keyshawn Vaughn is getting a lot of buzz. It's got some wiggle. Got some wiggle to his game. Keyshawn Vaughn.
Okay.
Keep an eye out on him because I don't know if Isaac Garrido is ready for the load to be a backup running back, his shiftiness or whatnot. I've heard mixed reports about him. So, but you better get a backup for Jordan Mason. You want him carrying the ball? I mean, we didn't even want Christian McCaffrey, who was the best player on offense in all of football last year, to touch the ball all the time. Jordan Mason, he said it after week one. I don't know how McCaffrey does this. This is tough. He's already had 48 carries through two games. Better go get another backup running back. Better go do that.
Well, they need to get right, and they got to win this one. I've been thinking about it long and hard. It's only week two. This game's huge. You can't lose to the Rams and give them life. They're missing a million people. You're missing a lot of people, but you have enough parts to be able to move the ball on offense. And defensively, like, you got to get going here. And if you look at the back end of the schedule after week five, like, it's really hard.
Yep.
Arizona gives you fits. The Chiefs are very difficult, clearly. Look at who you're playing.
Real quick, because I'm a sicko. And during the break, I was looking at K-State, Michael Bishop. So in 97, they finished number three in the country. They lost to Nebraska that year by 30. But they only lost one game, won the Fiesta Bowl. The next year, they were number two in the country, playing in the Big 12 championship game. Lost to Texas A&M, not Texas. It was Texas A&M, 36-33, and derailed their season. Michael Bishop was a cool guy. Just K-State knowledge here. When you talk about bishops. I'm a sicko like that. I was watching those games. Those games were fun. This guy was good. I was rooting against K-State because I didn't like Kansas or Kansas State. I didn't like their purple, but, you know, it is what it is. That's my K-State talk. Watch out for them in Provo. Matt Lively, River Islands. You don't like that, don't you, Shasky? Come on, man. That's good knowledge. Michael Bishop, who pulls that? What radio host knows who Michael Bishop is?
I don't know if it's good knowledge.
Yeah,
it's certainly knowledge.
It is very good. Michael Bishop was a bad, bad man. Matt Lively, he's a bad man on KPIX.
You saved the show.
Join us on River Islands Guest Line. This show's been a wreck. All guests on 95.7 The Game. Every show's a wreck. 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands Guest Line. It's a time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop. However, Matt Lively, Verg Lynn, they got something cooking. They got something cooking at KPIX. My man was out in Minnesota looking dapper. Matt, what's happening? Good morning.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the compliment. You know, you got to get a new suit jacket every once in a while.
Hey, sometimes you do. And look, you keep the weight off. I have trouble with that. So, you know, I have my suits tailored. There's no going back. I may, you know, I may be out of some money this year. Anyway, all right, you're at practice. You've seen what's going on here. We're just talking about Jordan Mason. Let's just start there. I know it's not sexy, and we'll get to the sexy stuff with the Purdy and the Shedhead and the swords and all that jazz. But backing up Jordan Mason, because he's on pace for 408 carries, and he's been a great story to start the season. But if he goes down, who would get the call to be the backup running back, especially without Deebo Samuel?
Yeah, that's concerning, right? Isaac Garrido would be the guy you think, because they traded up. They literally traded up in the fourth round to go draft this guy. But him getting one snap last week and he gets a no gain and then he's out of the game immediately does not bode well for the confidence there and what they're seeing past Jordan Mason. They went out and they signed Patrick Taylor Jr. from the Packers, who hardly played last year. They had Matt Breida for a second in preseason and then let him go. And Keyshawn Vaughn is on the practice squad, and he's a guy that was in Tampa for a long time and really didn't do much with his opportunity. So the Niners should either be looking in a trade market or bringing back Breida or really giving some heavy snaps to Isaac Garrido here moving forward, because if something does happen to Mason, and we've seen injuries happen all over the field in the National Football League this season, Garrido better be ready to step up and go And Kyle Shanahan doesn't like playing rookies a ton, so he's got to do something there to get Garrido into the mix more often than he's been.
How's Talanoa Hufanga look at practice yesterday?
Looked fine. I mean, he's been out on the field for a few weeks now, whether it's been off to the side or just running drills. But the fact that he is a full participant, he's ready to go. They wouldn't put him out there if that wasn't the case. And we saw what Justin Jefferson did to a couple of safeties in George Odom and Jair Brown on Sunday on that 97-yard touchdown reception. It's going to be such a boost having Hufanga back there this week, especially what a game to ease him into. You don't have Cooper Kupp or Puka Nacua out there as the Rams. This is going to be a cupcake game.
Oh, I like that, Matt. Hey, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Sports anchor, Channel 5, KPIX, Matt Lively. Hey, Matt, let me tell you. Last week, I was trying to tell Shasky it was a trap game, and he said, oh, they're going to beat Sam Darnold by 20. So you do what you do, Matt. I love the bold take. Now, Leonard Floyd was invisible in this game. Early downs, I'm Gross Matos maybe on early downs here. But what happens to George Odom now that Hufanga is? Did he go straight to special teams? Will Mustafa get more runway at safety? What's going to happen there once Hufanga does get back into the mix?
I'm ready for Malik Mustafa to play more of a role. I know it was just preseason, but God, this guy delivers a boom when he's out there. This is a captain in college at Wake Forest. This is a guy that's ready to step in and go. We saw them throw Jair Brown in last year. And he played well with the opportunity. Sure, there were some rookie mistakes, and it felt like a rookie mistake on Sunday on that Jefferson play, but Malik Mustafa's probably ready. Odom's still, you know, ahead of him on the pecking order, but someone probably gets a special teams call. Maybe it's Malik. Maybe they move George over, but all I know is Talanoa is coming back, so someone's getting the boot, that's for sure.
Who's returning kicks?
It's Jacob Cowing, still. That's what Shanahan pretty much indicated yesterday. That muff is bad, and I've seen a couple of Jacob Cowing muffs in practice, but at this point, you know, Debo's now hurt. You're not going to throw him back out there. It felt like they were drafting Isaac Garrido to maybe be set up for a return role because he is fast. I mean, he was one of the fastest guys at the combine, someone that would sort of remind you of Raheem Mostert, but they haven't really been giving him those opportunities to be back there returning. It's usually Debo and Cowing, or sometimes Kyle Juszczyk is back there on the kickoff. So on punt returns, I would still expect Jacob Cowing to be the guy to go to.
Matt, there's been a lot of talk about Brandon Ayuk, and we're going to magnify every pass thrown his way, targets, drops, catches, does not matter. And it's not the Shanahan way to maybe force feed a wide receiver. I would think this week you want to get him 10 targets here. What is the conversation around Brandon Ayuk? What are you seeing at practice here? Do you believe this could be the coming out party for Brandon Ayuk in 2024?
You hope so. I asked Brandon after the game on Sunday, you know, the production isn't where you would probably want it. And he kind of downplayed that. He didn't think that was all that true and that the numbers aren't speaking for where he's actually at on the field. We've seen the separation numbers in the advanced metrics, and the Niners rank in the bottom half of the league and where their wide receivers are getting separation, which is making it tougher for Brock Purdy. But all I'll say is this: if you just got paid $120 million and you sat out the entire preseason, all of training camp, and now Debo Samuel is hurt and Christian McCaffrey is hurt, it better be your coming out party. Because after Brandon, you've got Juwan Jennings, who is great. You still have George Kittle. It's not like this offense is lacking weapons, but Ricky Pearsall isn't ready to go. Jacob Cowing might have to take more of a role. You might see Chris Conley out there more, but those aren't the sexy names that you want when you're thinking of the 49ers. It is Brandon Ayuk or bust this week. He's got to have a big game to get his confidence up, to get this offense back in rhythm, because through 2 weeks, at the two games I've seen, it is a sloppy offense. Jordan Mason has covered a lot of that up with some really aggressive runs that pick up 10, 11 yards. But there have just been some really sloppy moments that this offense has kind of been bailed out at times. I thought Brock had to throw into tight windows last week. He's checking the ball down a lot, especially to Kyle Juszczyk, who's been involved in the passing game. Brandon Ayuk has got to open up something on the back half of the field.
Real quick, you brought up those separation numbers. Where was Brandon Ayuk at individually, or do you just have it as a team?
I just have it as a team right now from what I'm seeing. And I mean, but Brandon Ayuk, you know, last year that was his bread and butter. He was getting open deep, and Brock was making those throws, and we have not seen a home run ball so far through two games where you're going, all right, there it is. The deep threat has been established. I just haven't seen that through 2 weeks.
What's it feel like this year versus last year, just being around the team? Because there's like an aura. Each team has a different aura every year, right? Whatever it is, there's like a vibe, if you will. If last year was one way, how is this year?
I don't think the vibe changed all that much. And it, I mean, that's not that big of a shock considering this is almost a carbon copy of the roster they had last year. I don't think much has changed. I know during preseason a lot was made of you've got Trent and you've got Brandon holding out, and that's going to impact this team and the chemistry, but that's nothing new for the Niners. It was Nick Bosa the year before that and Deebo Samuel the year before that, and they made it to an NFC Championship and then a Super Bowl in those seasons. So I think the aura is just fine. There's, you know, it's tough coming off a loss when you're in that visiting locker room and those guys want to get out of there as soon as humanly possible. The aura never feels very good in there, but we still had Mooney Ward and D'Amador Lenore joking around, and George was funny in the post game. Like, this team is fine. It was a bad loss on Sunday, but the vibe, the aura is completely okay.
Were you surprised, because you asked the question and then you posted, but were you surprised Charvarius Ward was so candid regarding wanting to mirror the number one wide receiver from the other team?
Surprised only because we don't get answers like that from athletes often, but it makes sense that it came from Mooney because he is kind of an open book and he'll tell it straight, but I thought his answer was perfect. I didn't understand why he wasn't shadowing Justin Jefferson this entire game. Remember that Seattle game last year where he held DK Metcalf? It's like he didn't even suit up. It was like he was invisible. And when you have a guy like Justin Jefferson and you have their number two option in Jordan Addison not playing in that game, I didn't understand why it wasn't Mooney, and then they brought over help for a double. I mean, he should be the guy that is on the top receiver every single game. He is an all-pro for a reason.
No, that's a great point. That was a great question there in the locker room, and we were surprised there. So Nick Sorensen, you know, we had this guy, you know, Eric Crocker. I'm sure you've seen him on Twitter. He covers the Niners, 49ers sure. Lockdown podcast. And last year he came on the show and said, you know, Shanahan's really the defensive coordinator. He's the guy who wants guys to run his scheme or whatnot. So Nick Sorensen's on the sideline, and look, he's trying to do some new wrinkles. We saw Bosa drop back one time. I'm like, what are we doing? Thank God it was only once. It was probably once too many here. But how much heat do you think Sorensen, or when will the heat start to ratchet up for him? Because there was so much talk about Steve Wilks last year, Matt.
The talk on Steve Wilks last year happened really quickly. And at first it was, we don't want this guy up in the box. And then it was, you know, now he's down on the field. He still doesn't have enough energy. And it was Shanahan having to call a timeout because he didn't like what Wilks was about to call. There was a lot of tension last year. If you look at, you know, week one was great. He held Aaron Rodgers in check. Week two, had Fred Warner not come away with a couple of Superman plays, the final score of that game is probably a lot different than what it actually was. That was a much closer game than it ever should have been. And I think Fred really bailed out the defense on a couple of stops. I think if you come into this next schedule where they have the next stretch of schedule where they've got the Rams and then the Patriots and then the Cardinals, if you have three bad defensive performances, the Heat's going to get turned up. And I don't think the Niners necessarily make any sort of move, but the fans are not going to respond well.
Matt, unlike Marco Luciano, when you got called up to the morning roast, you delivered.
Yes,
I mean,
okay.
You are on fire right now. But just as somebody who, you know, you're relatively, you know, newer to this market, and you see the Niner fan fervor.
Yeah, where are you from, by the way?
Well, okay, well, ask that guy.
Go ahead.
But like, Matt, like, I think the West Coast, San Francisco, oh, you guys are soft Niner fans. Niner fandom is out of control. These people are insane. I mean, I'm one of them. Believe me, I'm at the forefront, losing my mind, you know, quarter to quarter, play to play, no doubt about it. Like, it's kind of underrated how crazy this roller coaster is following this particular team, right? I mean, they're out there, the Niners.
It's insane. I've tried to explain to people, I came from, to give you guys some background, covering Big 12 football. And there's a lot of hostile environments in that part of the country. When you go down to Levi's, when you're in those tailgate lots, when you're posting on social media, these fans are rabid in the best way possible. The love for this team, and rightfully so, for the run that many of these fans grew up watching with Montana and Rice and Ronnie Lott, this is a passionate fan base, and there isn't a lot of room for error, especially when they've had some of the success that they've had over the last 10 years or so. They are demanding at this point a Super Bowl, and I mean, you see it when you travel on the road. I went to L.A. last year for that game. Yeah. SoFi was completely red. I was in Arizona last year. I couldn't believe pregame how many fans completely covered the lower bowl.
Matt, the Cardinals don't have fans. Welcome to the NFC West. No, I know. I get what you're saying. But I guess let me ask you this one then. From the outside looking in, and you've been on this beat for a couple of years now, you're seeing this thing. What do you see that Niner fans do say about a player or a coach that you think is just wild?
I don't get the Kyle Shanahan hate. I understand he has not delivered on the Super Bowl,
but
I say this all the time. If Kyle Shanahan were to be fired tomorrow, there are 29 teams, and the only ones I'm not counting are the Chiefs, the Rams, and maybe the Ravens, who aren't calling Kyle Shanahan the second he walks out of Levi's Stadium and gets on a plane out of Santa Clara to come hire him. He is an offensive guru. He's a very good head coach, and I do not understand the hate for that man.
I mean, it's been – look, I could be critical, and I was labeled a Shanahan hater, but I've never once said that he should be fired at all. Not one time in my
Matt,
life.
We have a drop on the show. It's just Shanahan.
Yeah, it's a Shanahan problem.
To the high,
but I never said fire Shanahan.
No one
but
said
I've been.
You said
but,
that.
But you know, all these people that's coming around mad about his clock management week two in Minnesota. Well, I could point to Atlanta a couple years ago. I could point to Arizona game at Levi's Stadium with Colt McCoy looked like Roger Staubach. I could point to Super Bowl 54 for crying out loud.
But what if
but
I never said
fire Shanahan. I don't get the hate either, Matt.
No, but there is a real element of the clock management stuff is a bugaboo. And from the 917, we'll always get these texts. Hey, you guys never mention that your boy, this is from the 917, that your boy genius, Shanahan, in the last 7 years of his playoff losses, has been outscored 95-24 in the fourth quarter. That's crazy.
I just, listen. There's a reason he's probably been outscored. It's typically because his teams are up in games and they can take their foot off the pedal. I also would like to just point out, do we forget that stretch from 2000 to 2011 pre-Harbaugh where the Niners couldn't win anything? You've got a head coach that other franchises would die for, and you pair him with a GM who has put together one of the most loaded rosters year after year. I just do not understand where some of this hate comes from.
It's wild, Matt. Welcome to the Bay Area. Welcome. Where are you from, by the way? Where are you from? You said Big 12
country. Originally, the quick breakdown, originally from Florida. Went to school, actually, at Arizona State, so I do know something about the Cardinal fans. And you're right. Arizona sports fans are not great. But now I bounce all over, and I'm happy to land here in the Bay.
Let's go.
We do love Tucson out here. There's some people on the show that really love Tucson.
This will not be your
last. Well, I didn't say that. I don't like Tucson. I didn't say that.
No, I mean, not Tucson. Excuse me. Tempe. My bad. Got the wrong tees right.
What are you talking
Tempe,
about? I went to Mill, awesome.
Mill Avenue. That's great. Tucson's
that's right.
Nothing to Tucson.
No, man, Tucson's fun.
Tucson ain't that fun.
Yeah, trust me, it goes
there.
Off. Right,
I went out there. I mean, it goes off. That's all they got to do out there. But Tempe, Mill Avenue, Scottsdale, Phoenix.
That's
what we're talking about.
Yeah. Matt Lively, way to come strong today, baby.
I can't afford Scottsdale.
Vert Glenn can never do what you just did, Matt Lively.
No, not true. But I appreciate you guys having me on. Nah, it's been fun.
Anytime. Bird's a great guy. Great performance. Sports anchor for Channel 5, KPIX. He's been covering the Niners. He's been on the road with the Vert. Vert sent me some stuff the other day. Vert's funny, man.
What did Vert say?
He was just sending me some stuff they were doing at KPIX. We keep in touch.
Florida State football right now. Ooh.
I didn't need Flynn to say that. We all know.
The Shanahan thing's so funny. I love you to death. You know I do. I love you to death. You're like, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I can't tell you how many episodes we've done, if these are episodes, where it's literally me like, yeah, Shanahan's pretty good, but there's this. It's Shanahan. It's year seven and he doesn't know who his quarterback is.
Yeah, well, that is a problem.
You've been leading the drum.
No. That doesn't mean I said fire him.
I never did that come out of of my mouth.
That's what Matt was saying, to hate. But I've been critical of Shanahan, and you guys told me, well, I get it, and he didn't call a timeout. It's a broadcast, and Mahomes is on the sideline, blah, blah, blah. And then you throw a hissy fit with 20 seconds left in Las Vegas. I see what you're saying now in Super Bowl 54. Yeah. It's like, welcome to 2019, Shasky. It's already 2024. He has his flaws. The clock management has been an issue forever. I don't even get outraged over it no more. Because I'm just like, this is just who he is. It happened. Remember the Atlanta game? They had just beat Carolina. They had like seven defensive players out.
You don't get outraged anymore.
The Atlanta game.
February, you were outraged.
No, I don't get outraged about clocks anymore. You're the one who went through. You went crazy because it was 21 seconds. I said, well, that's what happened to Super Bowl 54. And you guys told me I was a psychopath. Whatever. I'm chilling. The Atlanta game, when they went down the field, down two scores, and they were just taking their time. It's like, where's the urgency? This is just who he is. So there's a lot of positives when it comes to Shanahan, but he's got some glaring flaws.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying, hey, go fire. Andy Reid had clock management
issues.
Nobody
said fire him. This is called analyzing an individual. This is what we do. We pick apart the carcass. That's what we do.
Don't put me in that box.
I've never
could lie to you talking about hot seat and some of the stuff. Like, you understand that if you fire Shanahan, he'll get a job 6 hours later.
If we were to just break down who has defended Shanahan throughout our relationship more, it would probably be me. I don't know by how much, but it would probably be me. You have to explain to me that Shanahan doesn't need to be fired. I have been backing Shanahan pretty. The biggest argument I would make is he got Jimmy Garoppolo to a damn Super Bowl, for crying out loud. That should be at the forefront of all conversations. First sentence, he got Jimmy Garoppolo.
Jimmy was really good at 2019. Come on, man. Okay. He was good in
2019. I'm afraid that it's going to have to be Jimmy Garoppolo that gets it done.
Yeah, in 2021, when his confidence was shook because he's like, damn, Shanahan don't even like me no more. He won't even let me throw the ball. 2019 was fine. He went up to Seattle for the first time since Alex Smith. Remember that? 18-22, 285, Sunday Night Football to go win the home field advantage in the AFC West. Like, wow, Jimmy can do nothing. He looked great in all whites. The Super Bowl. And Shanahan and the quarterbacks. And this is why it's important for Brock Purdy this year. You can laugh all you want to. We ain't going to be like, BPA is talking about 9-8 and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. We don't know if Brock Purdy's going to get paid or yet. And I'm not going down that road right now. I'm not going to do it. But when Shanahan sat there with Tim Kawakami the day before training camp and said, well, you know, can you pull up the cut? I want to pull up the cut. I just want people to listen to it. My biggest knock is I don't think Shanahan, the Tim Kawakami cut with Shanahan, where he's talking about the quarterback, a $60 million quarterback or a $50 million quarterback or a $1 million quarterback. Things change. How do you want to build your team? And I'm like, oh, he's putting in the outs. Just in case things go awry. You said it. I said it. We all said it. We know how Shanahan operates.
Give him the Farhan opt-out.
Come on, man. We know how Shanahan rolls. And that's been my biggest beef with Shanahan. If you don't like this guy, then go get your guy. Well, Brady was there wanting to come, and you didn't want him. Kirk Cousins, you want him? No. You don't want to trade for him? Stafford, you want him? No. No. What? Trey Lance, what? I don't know. That's been my biggest beef. But Shanahan's a damn good coach. He's a good coach.
I think everyone agrees that he's a good coach.
I don't know if everyone agrees with that.
I don't think anyone who says he's a terrible coach doesn't know what they're talking about. Now, does he have certain quote-unquote fatal flaws that are prohibiting him from reaching higher heights? Well, that's a different conversation, right? Like, there's levels to the conversation. If you say Shanahan's a bad coach, well, then you're just being, you're being unreasonable, right? This is an adult table. Let's talk sports like adults, right? And you can go sit at the kiddie table and talk kiddie table. Stuff. Uh-huh. If you think Shanahan is a poor coach. Now, is he great in clock management situations in high leverage playoff games? That's a very nuanced conversation, right? So to anyone who just says, hey, Shanahan sucks. It's like, all right, ridiculous.
It's Shanahan overrated, and I think that's ridiculous.
Well, overrated, what do you mean by overrated?
I don't know what these people mean. I don't say overrated, know what the rating is. I don't know why people say that. I don't listen to people say that. You just brought up the kiddie table and the big boy table. I've never been at the kiddie table, all right?
I didn't say that.
So I don't know what overrated means. I don't know when people say Bonte, he's overrated. I don't pay him no mind.
So what is his rating? If you had to rate Shanahan.
He's a top three coach in this league.
Okay.
That's what his rating is. Yeah. That's what his rating is. He's a damn good coach who's been able to keep this team together for many, many years. 54-29. It's not lost on me what George Kittle says. He's real. He tells players like it is. Sometimes he's too real, probably. But Shanahan's a good guy. Good guy. But you got the Kamikaze Cup? Spinotti's working on it.
Is this the one about the quarterback market getting crazy with the prices and stuff like that? Is that what you wanted? Which one specifically?
Maybe it's not what I threw you a curveball. We'll preview it during the break. But Matt Lively says something else that something we're going to monitor for a long, long time this season. Coming off of that Super Bowl where they couldn't beat press man. They couldn't beat man coverage. And Matt Lively just said, the Niners are one of the worst teams when it comes to gaining separation on their routes. That's why they drafted Ricky Pearsall, because Pearsall apparently is a guy who knows how to beat man coverage. It wins his one-on-ones. Hopefully he's getting right, because we may need him. But the Niners still have a problem with beating man coverage. And Brian Flores said, I'm going to blitz you, play man, and there was a lack of separation. That's something to monitor. Now, that's intriguing to me. Can we get separation on the outside to help out Brock Purdy?
I don't know. That's interesting. I know there's all these advanced analytics and stuff. That feels to me a little deep. Like, for example, Mike Evans. I don't think Mike Evans, and I don't know what the data tells you, but my eyeballs don't tell me that he's like boom, 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 in and out of his routes, and he's just like 4 yards open, you know, 3.5 yards open. To me, he's like, just throw it up, I'll make a play. You know what I mean? When I look at Nico Collins right now, the reason why I like Nico Collins is I'm like, damn, he's 6'4.5",
yeah,
and he's just a big body dude who, yeah, he can run. There's no doubt about it. Like, DK's a big body. Dude, he can run, but it's like the catch radius and the way he can block guys out. That's the thing I think that the Niners are missing, not this crazy separation. I think you need a couple more big body possession receivers. That's why Chris Connolly, who's not that great, that's why I think he does have a role, and Juwan Jennings does have a role. Like, does Juwan Jennings kill it when it comes to separation? Not really. He's got great hands, he's physical as hell, and he's got the trust of his quarterback. So, like, I'm not saying that those things don't matter. Getting separated, like, Jerry Rice was a separation monster, I'm sure, right? But there's other elements to being a really good player. Keenan Allen has made a career off of being a smooth route runner, but more than anything, just being reliable and being a guy who catches the ball over the middle. You know, Deebo Samuel's had a hell of a career just catching the ball in traffic. I don't think he gets great separation. So I think we make a little too much of these separation numbers. Now, can guys get open? Does the quarterback trust them? Well, are you dialing up play calls for that guy? Are you running specific things to get people open? Those are like a little more different than just pure separation numbers.
Well, you don't have outside wide receivers who are not blazers, who are not like, we don't think of Brandon Ayuk as a
take
big speedster
off
guy. Yeah. We don't think of Deebo as a big speedster guy. We don't think of Jennings as a big speedster guy. We hope Cowan could be that. We hope Pearsall could possibly be that. But we don't have that. I think separation is key. I think getting in the right position. They were all over Deebo Samuel last week. Now, Deebo ended up having a really good game, made some great catches over the middle of the field, some high throws from Brock Purdy. Now, I would like to see him lower. It's like, yo, you can't miss high over the middle.
I agree.
You gotta be careful there. The fact that they are having this issue, it's just something to monitor. I think it's something coming off of that Super Bowl, that image of like, damn, Kansas City dared them to pass. They sat up in man defense and said, we're going to blitz the hell out of you. You empty the backfield, you go 5 wide, we're bringing 6. Like, straight up. And they had no answers for it. And on the goal line on Sunday, same thing. You want to go empty gun? Van Ginkle gets in, he's scot-free. Free rusher. We got to do something about the skill.